Thank you very much for having me. I'm very glad to have the opportunity to tell you a little bit about what we do and particularly what we're focusing on right now. I work for the Law, Race and Gender Research Unit in the Law Faculty. I work for a project in particular that's called the Rural Women's Action Research Project, the focus of which is, I suppose, quite self-explanatory, but primarily on trying to assist rural women in gaining sort of legal security. And by virtue of the fact that customary systems are very complex and intricate, and it's difficult to sort of get in there and try and bring change without recognizing the fact that the systems themselves kind of have a life of their own. We end up actually looking at governance issues, and so looking at women's participation, and I think our basic principle in that is that actually the key thing is for women to be able to bring their own change, and the best way for that to happen is by women being able to participate in the decision-making bodies within their communities and consequently contributes to the way in which customary law develops. And in part, that's also based on the Constitutional Court's decision where it, well, series of decisions actually, where it's talked about customary law as being primarily that system of Indigenous law that develops on the ground and is developed by the people in order to adapt to the changes and needs of their own circumstances. And so a definition of customary law that's very much based on the people's own agency and their ability to make decisions for themselves. That brings me to the Traditional Courts Bill, which is the primary thing I'm going to speak to you about today. The Traditional Courts Bill is a piece of draft legislation that's before Parliament currently. It was initially drafted in, it was introduced into the National Council of Provinces in May of 2008. When the Department of Justice brought into the National Assembly this piece of legislation which hadn't been seen before and which many people hadn't had the opportunity to participate in consultations around. And what this piece of legislation is supposed to do is regulate the way in which traditional communities make decisions in the context of dispute resolution. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about this piece of legislation and the issues around it, ending with a focus on women's issues and the concerns that this bill raises for women's ability to participate in decision-making forums and the development of customary law in their locales. So the talk primarily focuses on the process, the substance, and the implications of this piece of legislation, and I hope that in the conversation we'll be able to talk in greater detail. Pursuant to your questions, about issues, the broader issues that it raises, especially within the context of your own concerns, which have brought you here today. So the Traditional Courts Bill, I'm sorry, my computer is having a very strange, lazy day, so I'm going to just sort of talk and ignore it. Please feel free to also ignore it. It'll catch up at some point. Okay, there we go. It's catching up. So as it is, I'm basically going to talk about the background of the bill and then talk about some of the specific issues, of which there are four primary ones that form the focus. The one being the centralization of power to traditional leaders in traditional communities, most traditional leaders being men. And secondly, the assignment of really extensive powers, which could potentially cause a lot of problems for ordinary rural people who would essentially be subjects rather than citizens in this paradigm, and then the creation or the re-establishment of apartheid boundaries as jurisdictional boundaries, and then finally the ways in which women are not afforded adequate protection by this bill. The background of the bill, as I briefly alluded to, is the fact that it was introduced in May of 2008 and through a complicated process was finally withdrawn from the National Assembly in June of 2011, and then finally reintroduced in the National Council of Provinces at the beginning of this year. And so the bill is about to be rolled out to the provinces, so they're going to be doing consultations. In fact, the Western Cape legislature will be doing consultations on the bill on the 23rd and 24th of this month, as well as May 10th. And so in case you guys get fired up about this issue and decide that you'd like to make submissions, that would be your opportunity to contribute to the public hearings in that process. Before the traditional courts bill, there was a prior process where the South African Law Reform Commission, which is obviously responsible for trying to reform our legislation, and in fact the constitution says that traditional courts can continue to operate under apartheid legislation, which is namely the Black Administration Act of 1927. So even that date tells you how out of date this legislation is. And so the South African Law Reform Commission was supposed to reform that legislation and reform the way in which customary courts operated under apartheid. And so they held, you know, widespread consultations between 1998 and 2003. And their conclusions in their report were that customary courts are actually very important. They provide access to justice potentially for 17 to 21 million South Africans. That's the number of people living in the former homeland. And they're actually providing a relatively easy and economical solution to access to justice problems for people who generally aren't able to access the magistrate court system. However, the traditional leaders objected to the bill by virtue of a few points that I'm going to tell you about momentarily. And they, subsequently what happened then was that the South African Law Reform Commission's recommendations disappeared, and the Department of Justice then drafted this piece of legislation in which it only consulted traditional leaders and didn't consult any ordinary people. And as a result, the traditional courts bill does away with a lot of the things that the South African Law Reform Commission had recommended as necessary to address the problems in rural areas, and actually tends to favour traditional leaders and the interests that they had put forward and the objections they'd made to the South African Law Reform Commission bill. An important thing about the traditional courts bill, which I'll come back to in a few slides' time, is the fact that it actually doesn't stand independently. So it stands as a piece of legislation built on another piece of legislation, that's the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003. Now, the TLGFA is important because of its doing two main things, actually three main things. One is the fact that it resuscitates the traditional leaders who were recognized under apartheid. And those of you who are familiar with South Africa's history around rural areas and traditional leadership will know that actually a lot of traditional leaders' legitimacy is very questionable by virtue of the fact that most traditional leaders who maintained their status as traditional leaders maintained it because they were accomplices with the apartheid government. They were co-opted into the apartheid system and used as an instrument for oppression. And those who were legitimate traditional leaders were often taken out because they weren't willing to cooperate. And so there's a question about the legitimacy of the resuscitation of traditional leaders who existed under apartheid. Second thing is that it resuscitates the boundaries that existed under apartheid. So the piece of legislation says those entities that existed as tribes under apartheid will now be traditional communities recognized under the present. You will know also then that a lot of communities were sort of mixed together according to the apartheid government's own ideas and own objectives. And so there are a lot of communities that actually don't belong together, that are together, and people who are subjected to traditional leaders who weren't their own because they were forcibly removed and taken to places where they were required to adhere to the rules and authority of a foreign traditional authority. So that's a problem in itself. And then the structures, the institutions that were put in place to govern over them, the traditional authorities, have also been resuscitated as traditional councils. And what the traditional courts bill does then is it takes those authorities and it takes those boundaries and it further legitimizes them using the instrument of law by saying that they're the ones that are going to govern disputes of people in their areas. And so traditional courts, boundaries and jurisdictions are going to be those that existed under apartheid, and the authorities that are going to be making decisions are the very same authorities that existed under apartheid. So you can recognize the legitimacy question there, which is often raised. But turning to the first main point about the traditional courts bill, sort of following on from that point of resuscitation of boundaries and authorities, is that it recognizes the presiding officer as being that senior traditional leader who is the person who has been recognized as traditional leader today, having been recognized under apartheid, right? So you see the continuity. And in fact, it doesn't just recognize them as the person who constitutes the traditional court. In other words, there are no other actors who are recognized as forming the traditional court. But it also then says that they have all the power. So essentially, all the power that's given in the bill is given to the single individual. And no functions, no powers or recognition is given to other role players, particularly councillors, who the South African Law Reform Commission has said are actually an integral part of customary dispute resolution, playing an important role. They're not recognized at all. This, of course, stands in contrast to the separation of powers which exists under our constitution. You know, our constitution says that legislative powers, dispute resolution or judicial powers, as well as executive powers, are to be held by different bodies and hence different people, so as to ensure that there are checks and balances and to ensure that abuse of power can be moderated or avoided entirely. But the Traditional Courts Bill, following on from the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, which assigns traditional authorities administrative roles, and in a wide variety of areas, including land administration, including education, health, safety and security, issuing of marriage and death and birth certificates, management of natural resources, all of this wide array of activities, and governance powers can be assigned to traditional authorities. And these are administrative powers, right? But then on top of that, the Traditional Courts Bill comes in and says traditional leaders can also decide disputes as individuals. And more than that, because customary law is not written down anywhere, the person who gets to say what customary law is in a dispute is the person who effectively gets to legislate customary law, right? Because that's where it gets nailed down as to this is what the customary law principle is. And so you can see how they have these threefold powers embodied in a single individual, and that stands in very stark contrast to what the Constitution requires. Actually, just to take a moment, I don't know if any of you saw in the news the story about Nelson Mandela's grandson, Mandla Mandela, who's the traditional leader in Mvezo, and how his community was taken into court for the fact that he's exercised land administration power in a manner inconsistent with their norms. And so he's removed them from the land, and he's proposing to take away the grave sites of their ancestors and build a hotel. And in that case, actually, if the Traditional Courts Bill applied, he has legitimate administrative powers of land allocation, and then he would have, on top of that, the ability to decide that dispute in his court. And it would be up to him to decide whether that actually is a conflict of interest and that actually he should take the case elsewhere. And quite possibly, depending on what punishments he gave the people in that case, he could actually stop them from appealing, because there's certain sanctions that are not appealable under the legislation. And so you recognize that actually, like, this is a very real problem for people, where actually traditional leaders in some cases are using their powers in abusive ways. And so talking about powers, and in fact talking about sanctions, the Traditional Courts Bill provides quite extensive powers for traditional leaders. So what it says is that they can hear both civil and criminal cases, although there are a few exclusions. And so in the civil context, some of these exclusions are constitutional matters. They're not allowed to hear constitutional matters. However, it's quite strange that they're also supposed to be giving effect to people's human rights. And human rights are constitutional matters, so it's not clear how the exclusion of constitutional matters would actually work. They're not allowed to hear divorce and separation cases, but of course they're matters that come to traditional courts that actually are effectively divorce and separation cases. Like, for example, a contractual case like lobolo, right? If a family says, no, we want our lobolo back, that's effectively a divorce. But the Traditional Courts Bill wouldn't exclude the lobolo from the jurisdiction of the traditional courts. So there's a problem there as well. Custody and guardianship of children is excluded, which I think is appropriate. And wills are excluded, but not dispute resolution around inheritance intestate, so where someone doesn't have a will. And as we know, that's where most of the action actually is, because a lot of people don't have wills. And consequently, that's where women often
are finding themselves at risk of dispossession and disadvantage. And in fact, some of the organizations, the women's groups that participated in the South African Law Reform Commission process had argued quite strongly that land matters should be excluded because women are so often subject to eviction because some customary communities believe that women aren't entitled to own land because land should only be owned by a family, and that family has to have a family head, and that family head is obviously a man. And so, actually, women are, if they come into a situation where there's a dispute over land, women often lose over their brothers, over their in-laws, over their uncles. And so this was why women's groups argued that land should be excluded from their jurisdiction, but that hasn't been done. There are limitations on the criminal sanctions as well. So things, sort of stock standard things like no cruel or degrading punishment, no detention or imprisonment of people, no banishment, no fine of an amount that we don't know yet, and no corporal punishment. The really perplexing thing, though, is that these limitations aren't imposed for civil matters. However, anyone who knows or certainly has read the papers and seen some of the cases that come from customary courts, it's for people being beaten for things that actually aren't criminal cases, being beaten for civil cases. So there was a horrifying case a few years ago where a pregnant woman was subject to a beating as a punishment from the traditional court because she had tarnished a wealthy man's name, having said that this man, who I think was married to somebody else, had impregnated her. And so this is a civil case, right? It's a defamation case, but she was subject to punishment in the form of corporal punishment, but that's not excluded from the traditional court's jurisdiction. And more than that, they can also order any person to perform unpaid labor. Given the fact that 59% of people living in traditional court areas, in traditional areas, are women and children, the fact that they can order any person, right, not just the person who's a party to the case, but any other person. So possibly, you know, the man, let's say he's working at a mine, could say, well, what about my job? And then his wife and children could then have to serve his sentence for him. Because they're at home, right? And so you can see how that could be very open to abuse. And of course, the very notion of unpaid labor is itself questionable. If a person were to go to the magistrate's court, they wouldn't be ordered to perform unpaid labor. And so there's a definite concern about that. Further than that, they can deprive people of customary entitlements. And in terms of customary law, customary entitlements would include access to the community, as in community membership, and access to land, which comes by virtue of being a member of the community. And as I pointed out in the previous slide, banishment is only excluded in the context of criminal cases. So in the context of civil cases, a person could actually be ordered off the land and effectively banished, which is itself a problem. And if a person doesn't actually perform the sanction that's been imposed on them in the first round, they can be sanctioned even further, which seems like a very coercive structure for these courts, which are supposed to be functioning under a restorative justice sort of harmonization principle, where it's to create harmony within the community. So I pointed out the fact that the boundaries, the jurisdictional boundaries that exist for the traditional courts under this legislation are boundaries that were actually established under apartheid. How that actually comes into being is, as I said, under the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, it has these provisions that say that the traditional leader, the tribe, and the tribal authority of old are now deemed to be the very same ones that are now supposed to exist under this new piece of legislation. And actually those were put in place, were recognized under the Bantu Authorities Act of 1951, which, as it happens, the ANC at the time wrote very vociferously rejecting, because they said, this isn't our custom, this isn't customary law, we won't allow the apartheid government to deceive us into thinking that this is a representation of our own systems. But now, this is what traditional leaders argue and lobby for as their custom, and these are the powers that they want to have resuscitated. And so what that looks like in terms of the jurisdictional boundaries is this map of about 1986, which is of the homelands. You can see the Transkei, the Ciskei, KwaZulu, Kwakwa, Gangwane, Kazankulu, Lubuwa, Gwandebele, and Bophuthatswana, have effectively just sort of been revised. And so this is what the traditional council map looks like in 2010 as a result of this legislation of 2003. And so the 17 to 21 million of South Africans who were previously confined to initially 7% and then 13% of the land are still confined to 13% of the land and subject to being, you know, ruled and governed under those systems that are confined to those areas. And the difficulty, of course, is the fact that in terms of the traditional courts bill, not only are these boundaries recognized, but people then aren't able to opt out. In fact, it's a criminal offense for a person to try and to avoid coming to the traditional court once they've been summoned by the traditional court. And they can be punished using those very same punishments that I mentioned to you earlier. And this is regardless of whether people are actually private owners or, you know, have the land under trust or communal property associations, because, you know, some people have subsequently claimed the land back under restitution processes. And so those people wouldn't be able to opt out either. So a traditional leader who actually has no basis, no legal basis to tell them what to do on their land, would be able to make decisions for them about what to do on their land in the context of disputes. And in fact, there are some communities that, as I pointed out earlier, were mixed and matched under apartheid and had no business being together. And even those people would be compelled to go to the traditional courts under this legislation. I'll skip that example because we only have 4 minutes left. But